The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. From hot dogs to cool kitties, this is Dark Side of the Pooch.
Welcome back to Dark Side of the Pooch. I am Tony Curry. He is Dr. Rab Stewart, Rossbridge Animal Hospital. This is a show we do every single week here, brought to you by the fantastic folks down there at Sasquatch Comics and Toys, Toys and Comics down there in the Homewood. They've got all kinds of toys and comics from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, unopened stuff in the box, Legos, Star Wars stuff, collectibles, all kinds of great comics. Check out Sasquatch Toys and Comics, and of course, also Ed's Pet World, been in business for nearly 50 years. Dr. Rab, how you doing, brother? What's going on?
Have you done something different with your hair?
I did.
It looks very good.
As opposed to before. See, it's weird because I got a haircut, right? And so when it's this short, it parts this way. It parts from the left to the right. And then as it grows out, I have to go to the left from the right to the left. It's kind of weird. And then I don't know. It's weird though, because I was one of these guys where I was going to fight the gray bird, man. I was like, I am not doing the gray thing. And if you get 40s and 50s and 60s, as the gray starts eventually coming in, if you work with it as it comes in, no one will ever even know that you're going gray, because you're working with it as it flies. Now, if you're one of these knuckleheads that ends up being like 65 years old and you're like, you look like a gray goose, and all of a sudden you just go jet black, you're going to look like a dork. I mean, a lot of people do that. And so I thought, well, I'll just start working with it. So what I normally do is I put some stuff in my tips. I usually put some blondes in the summertime. And it brings up my tan. It makes me look nice, right? At least that's what the ladies say. And but the last time I did that, and you know, daughters are brutally, brutally honest. I mean, yesterday my daughter said, "Your breath smells like a skunk's ass," is what she told me. And I was like, "Gee, thanks, Lila." And she's like, "I'm serious." She goes, "Your breath has never smelled worse." I'm like, "Okay, let me go brush my teeth." Forgot. It's like, you don't have to be so honest. I didn't ask. Okay. I didn't ask if I smell like a skunk's ass, but thanks for telling me. She didn't say ass. She said back end of a skunk. So she said, "Yeah, whatever you did to your hair, man, it's making you look really old." And I was like, "Really?" I said, "I do that every year." And she goes, "Well, stop, because it looks horrible. If you ever want to go on a date again, don't ever do that to your hair again." I was like, "Dude, okay." So she's kind of gotten in my brain a little bit, right? So this year I didn't do the tips. And I just, but it is amazing, because when I see myself on Fox 6 or ABC 3340, what were your TV show? It does. They say it adds 10 pounds. It adds some gray hair too. That's all I'll say.
Well, when I knew that there was no hope for my hair.
Yeah.
This was about, probably 15 years ago. I just knew there was no hope. And so I went.
Was this a family thing? Did your father have?
No, I mean, you could just tell, you know, like you can just tell the way it's going. Yeah. And I used to have a lot of hair and I loved it. I used to have, I mean, it wasn't quite like as long as Robert Plant, but like think of Robert Plant's hair. Mm-hmm. And that's what my hair was like. And that was like my identity. And I was living in Arizona and I went to get a haircut and I went to, a chain.
Yeah.
And the girl said, "Okay, do you want me to cut it this way or that way? Because I could cut it a certain way and it'll cover up your receding hairline." And I'm 26 years old at this point.
Wow.
I'm 26 years old. And it wasn't bad.
Yeah.
And that's when I said, "No, just do it however you want to do it." And then the next time I went to get my hair cut, I sat down in the chair and I told the person, I said, "All right, I want you to use a 4-blade and on the top and a 3-blade on the side.
That is small.
I want you to spin me around." Mm-hmm. "Don't show me."
Yeah.
Just cut it and I'm getting out of here. And I've done it that way ever since. Okay. And so now it's just kind of like, well, you know, it's very transient. You know, it's very like insidious. It's almost like now there's like less and less hair there, but who cares?
Dr. Claypo has had the same exact situation to his hair. He was a surfer out in LA, dope smoker when he was 17, had the long hippie hair, good looking guy, still good looking guy. And then in his mid-20s, started receding. And he said just, and then once he cut it back, he's like, I wish, had I known it was going to go this fast, he goes, I wish I didn't cut him back that fast, because once it's gone, it is gone. And it ain't coming back. So it makes it kind of difficult, but yeah. So,
and I'm married, you know, my wife loves me, whatever. Well, sure. Let it go.
Yeah. But you're going to see, and see my hair, I know does not look as good right now as it could, but I do like going as short as possible, because it's so damn easy to get ready. I mean, I can be ready to go in 5 minutes with this hair. I mean, I can go to this, as long as I take a shower the night before, I can go to the sink and just put water in it and I'm out. I don't have to stick my head under the faucet. I don't have to do anything. I mean, I can be ready to go in like 5 minutes, brush my teeth, I'm out the door. And as my hair gets a little longer, then I have to start putting some gel in it because I start getting flips and flyaways and stuff like that. And yeah, maybe
that's the life of the dude. That's the life of the dude.
Yeah, ladies, we're not complaining. We're not complaining, ladies. Trust me. All right, so you and I were having a brief discussion, and I was like, we should just roll on this because we were going to probably talk about this a lot as well. I want to thank everyone who chimed in, info@TonyCurryRadio.net, .com. We did lose our Frisco dog last week. Lost him on Tuesday, or I guess it was Tuesday or Wednesday. And obviously we've gotten some pretty good show material out of talking about what he went through and whether it was some autoimmune situation or intestinal cancer or whatever. So we put him on prednisone. We get him back. He's getting B12 shots. He's on this special EN dog food that is like high powered protein. And he starts gaining weight. And he's pooping regularly. He's not throwing up, and I'm thinking, okay, this is great. We have a show together, and you're like, give me some good news. I told you, I actually put him on a leash. And then all of a sudden his belly started getting really tight and really big. Describe to me what was going on with that. I just thought it had been so long since he had a really good meal that he was just, cause he was eating everything I put out for him. And I knew that we were in trouble because when I tried to touch his belly, he started yelping. It wasn't like he was just fat. It was like it was really sensitive. I mean, he would lay on my chest and spread his legs, and I would just take my fingers and just rub his belly. And I mean, he was in heaven. He just lie there, and he let me do it to him for hours on the last couple of days, and I did it for hours. But what exactly was happening to his stomach?
He was still accumulating fluid in his abdomen. So it was his belly wasn't getting bigger because he was getting full of food. His belly was getting bigger because his protein level, once we put him on the prednisone, it rebounded, but then it got low again.
Yeah.
And so the fluid leaked out from his intestines, and there's nowhere for it to go except for just to kind of sit in his belly.
So
And we mentioned this a couple weeks ago, but the only way to have nailed down what his diagnosis was to get a biopsy. Mm-hmm. And when you're dealing with animals, they get sick seemingly very quickly, when in reality, it probably takes longer than we think, but because they can't vocalize that they're not feeling well, a lot of times we don't get to them until they're pretty bad off.
Yeah.
And so
that's a great point, by the way. And I didn't realize that because I was talking to my friends, they're like, wow, that happened fast. And it was fast. It was over the course of a couple of weeks. I mean, I brought him in for a cough a couple of months ago, and that was unrelated to what was going on here with this situation. And it does go by, but you bring up a great point, because when you bring in, and for people that don't realize this, and I didn't know, cause I've never been through this before, and I've had dogs my entire life. I'm 58 years old. When a human being goes in, they can tell them what's wrong, and they've got an idea of, okay, it's going to be one of these three or four different types of things just based on the way they're looking at you. When an animal comes in, it can be 50 different things, and you have to start checking boxes. Okay, it's not this, it's not this. That's how you figure out what's wrong with the dog in most cases, I'm assuming, right? It's not this, so it must be one of these things. And when you get down to two or three things, and then, of course, he would not have been healthy enough to go under the knife anyway. So we took a shot, but I'll say this. And I told myself, I'm not going to get emotional on this again. I didn't want my kids to see me cry, but I did. I got it out of my system. I was good to go. But you gave him another week, a pretty good life. And I'm so happy my kids were here, and we've showered him with love. And when he went, he was in the living room. We had a blanket around him and he just, you know, his eyes were wide open and he was getting kind of stiff, but he was still breathing. When he passed away, I picked him up. And you know what sharding is? You know what shard is? For you people out there, it's basically when you think you're going to fart, but you poop all over yourself. I picked him up and his butt exploded, basically. I guess it was because all of his muscles were just let go. And he just, which I'm assuming is what happens to an old person, right? Doesn't it happen to a human being? I mean, when your body just shuts down, I guess you just poop all over yourself, right? I've never been around someone dying or seen someone, I've seen them die, but I haven't seen them, you know. So when I picked him up, it just exploded and it went all up and down Lila's arm. And we laughed and it was so wonderful for us to laugh. She's like, I guess Frisco got the last laugh. And I said, all those times I was so angry when he pooped in my carpet, he got the last laugh because it went everywhere. And you know,
so when we pick them up, you know, after they're euthanized or they die, I pick them up. So I tilt them head down.
Because, I wish I had known.
I tilt them head down. Or also we have, we have a service that cremates them. That's how, you know, we dispose of them. And so when we're putting them in the, when we're wrapping them up and getting them prepared for the cremation service to come get them, you know, I'll lift them up like butt first.
Yeah.
And then we'll start wrapping them up from the backside because that way everything's contained, you know, because if you lift that head up, it's like a slide.
About an hour before he died, he got up and walked all the way into the kitchen, which I was like, well, hello, what are you doing in here? And again, you know, you told me that if he's not going to make it. So, and the kids were praying and we were hoping for a miracle, but he let it rip in the kitchen, all over the place. And it was horrible. And, you know, he was still alive. And then it was almost like a movie. He made this really weird noise. That's the first time I seen a dog die like that. You know, he made this really strange, weird noise and crept his neck a little bit and he was out. But we put him in the, just so people know, and I've gotten several people like, what would you do with him? I'm Catholic, so we don't really believe in the cremation, process, but I buried him in the front yard of my rental. And my daughter's like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm burying him. And he was what, 10 pounds? I mean, he wasn't big, but I mean, it's a pretty nice size box, a couple of shoe boxes. And I said, I'm burying him in the front yard. She goes, why? And I said, well, if I bury him in the backyard and I have to move, I'll never be able to see him again. I said, but if I bury him in the front yard, I can drive by this house the rest of my life and know where Frisco Dog is. And so we buried a pretty big hole in the front yard, buried him and put a little keepsake. And it was amazing because the weather has been really, really wet. And so we walked the neighborhood and there, I don't know if this is like this in your neighborhood, but there are 8 trillion mushrooms that are popping up all over the place. And yesterday afternoon, right on top of his grave, a mushroom here, a mushroom came up. And it was right. It was right on his headstone. It popped up right on his headstone, and I did a time lapse on it, and within an hour it had sprouted up, and then the sun hit it today and knocked it out. But it was his way of saying I'm still here, but we thank you for everything you did at Rossbridge Animal Hospital, and considering how long I've had animals, that's the first time I actually had to go through that, and I was so glad that he could be home with us. Because I know that he knew who we were, and I know I'm talking about him like a human, but he was. But it's still tough. It's hard.
Yeah,
yeah. He was a little
boring. So just going back to your, you know, your point about people. So, you know, I have a friend who, a good friend who was having back pain. He was fine. You'd never know anything was wrong with him. He was still, you know, playing sports and running around, exercise, and also was having back pain. So he went in to have his back looked at, and they did a CT on him, and they found that he had an adrenal tumor that wasn't causing his back pain. But see, wow. That's what you don't get with dogs.
Yeah,
you know, your dog doesn't say, you know, I'm hurting here. Let's go get this checked out. You know, they get so far behind the eight ball.
Yeah,
and then by the time anybody realizes it, they're so sick that you can't do the surgery that you need to do to diagnose the problem.
I don't know if this because is then was your friend's name Mark?
No.
Because I had a friend named Mark, and he was cutting his grass, and he got a back pain, and he was like, whoa, and he thought he pulled something in his back and went to the doctor, and same thing happened to him. He had a tumor in his back, and he was just cutting grass. He's healthy as all get out in his mid-50s. Yeah. And so, yeah.
Friend's going to be fine. My friend's going to be fine, by the way.
But, okay, good. Okay, good. You know, okay, good. Good.
Yeah, he's going to be fine. But that just tells you that it's different with animals. That's why we tell people it's so important to come in for like wellness checks and to do, you know, blood work, even when your pet is seemingly healthy, because you'll find things a lot sooner. And if they could speak, a lot of these pets would tell you that, you know, I've got symptoms of diabetes or kidney disease or a thyroid problem or heart murmur, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. And I can't, you know, I'm guilty. He's the next guy. You know, I don't bring him in every year like I should. I get the reminders from Rossbridge Animal Hospital, and looking back on that, because a lot of people are like, it's too expensive, and I get it. I understand it. And we're from a different generation. I don't think we even had a veterinarian in Westchester, Ohio. So we never took a vet, and all of our dogs, lived to 13, 14, 15 years old, got hit by cars, and they were fine, you know? But looking back on it now, there's two things that I've looked back on. First of all, I'm not going to miss my follow-ups. And second of all, that pet insurance is sounding pretty good. I thought that was a joke when they came up with pet insurance 4 or 5 years ago. Are you kidding me? And now it's like everyone I talk to is like, oh yeah, I got pet insurance. Yeah, it'll take one of those, and I'm going to get insurance for my appliances. I'm going to get my home shield. I'm going to get my car shield, and I'm going to get my pet shield. Yeah. But by the way, if you're thinking about doing that pet stuff too, I was also told by several people that it's not retroactive. You have to wait 6 months before you can actually use. So if you get your dog, you know, some pet insurance and he dies 5 months after you get the pet insurance, it's not going to matter anyway. They have to be at least 6 months in before they'll cover anything, which kind of sounds
get it early. And you know, they have deductibles just like we do.
All right. We got some email questions. info@tonycurryradio.net. But again, thank you for everything you did. info@tonycurryradio.net. And you can send those. And again, thanks to all the emails. We got just a ton of emails from people that were spreading their prayers and thoughts my way. And I really appreciate that. With that being said, I'm going to kind of sprinkle in some questions I had. And I've already had you answer several of those. Best way to comfort the other dog. We always talk about old dogs. When one person, an old couple, you know, you hear these stories about people who've been married for 63 years, they're holding each other's hand and the mother dies and the father dies within 3 minutes. It's an old dog thing. First of all, is that somewhat of a myth? Old dogs that have been together for a long period of time, does one usually die right after the other? And second of all, what's the best way to comfort that other dog once it's lost his friend?
This is all anecdotal, but I've always heard that you want the other dog to smell the other dog after it's gone, you know.
We did that. It was weird because he was out there with us, Rainer dog. He's sitting behind me right now, and the box was still open, and he went up and by that time he had lost almost all of his hair, and he smelled his rib cage and licked his rib cage. I let him lick him for a good minute. I mean, he was licking his rib cage. I don't know how else to put it. And it was kind of beautiful. I mean, it was kind of a beautiful, my son was like, oh, that's disgusting. I was like, that's kind of a beautiful thing. He knew that he was gone, and it was his way of showing his reverence and showing his respect to him.
Yeah. So that, like I said, it's anecdotal. I don't know that you could ever prove any of this stuff helps, but, I've always heard that, and keeping something that the other dog, you know, laid on. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's got kind of scent on it and stuff could help, you know, just with some comforting and reminders and stuff. I mean, they'll mourn just like people do. They'll mourn for a little while and kind of, you know, be a little bit mopey around the house, but they usually, you know, take some time, takes a couple of weeks, and then they're back to their normal selves.
Yeah. And I am, again, I'm not a pet psychologist, but I would bet that Rainer is happier now, just because he's the man. He was not the alpha dog. And it's weird because he's still sitting by his food bowl waiting for because Frisco would always eat first, and he's waiting for Frisco to eat first before he'll eat. And so like the last couple of nights, he hasn't eaten till like 10 o'clock at night till he finally goes, okay, I guess he's not coming. Then he'll go eat his food. The kids, obviously the first second that Frisco wasn't even cold yet what kind of dog you get? What kind of dog you get? I'm like, what do you mean? What kind of dog am I getting? You get another dog, right? I'm like, oh, I said, let's let the body cool down a little bit there, kids.
And so I got a dog.
Yeah, I got a dog. And he, I think he likes being the only dog. It's one less animal I got to worry about. But when you're talking about getting another animal, is it best to wait a little bit? Is it best to get one right away? And then how do you find an animal that is going to be that's going to get along with your other dog? When you're picking out animals, you pretty much have to shop with the other one in hand, correct?
I don't think it matters.
No? Okay.
I don't think it matters, because I think that you could do it either way, and you could come out with a positive or you could come out with a negative. Yep. You know, you could get a new dog before the other dog passes away, and it could work out great or work out terrible. You could wait until the dog's been gone for a while, get a new one. It could work out great or work out terrible.
Is there any reason we had a big dog and a small dog? Small dog dies. Is there any thinking, and should I get another small dog, or would it be okay to get another big dog? I'm not getting another dog right now, but if I were,
sure.
They're like, are you going to get a big dog or a small dog? And I'm like, well, I had a big dog, small dog. It worked out pretty well. And I like having smaller dogs because it's smaller poop. it is. I mean, smaller problems. It is. And they're not as expensive and they live longer. So what should I do? Does it matter to have, and the other question too is he was not the alpha dog. When another dog comes in the family, will he revert back to that order?
I think that if you are not an alpha, you're not an alpha.
Yep.
So I think that Rainer will be a submissive dog no matter what you bring in.
Okay, good.
So the fact that you have a submissive dog, a seemingly submissive dog, means that you can probably, I don't know that I would focus so much on size. You know, if you were to get another dog, get the size dog that you want.
Yep.
If you want a small dog, get a small dog. You want a big dog, get a big dog. Mm-hmm. If you had an alpha, if you felt confident that you had an aggressive alpha type dog in Rainer, then you'd have to be very careful and very selective. You know, you have the benefit of knowing what kind of personality you have in your dog already.
Yeah.
So since you have the submissive one, you should be okay no matter what. But if you had an aggressive one and then you brought in another aggressive dog, then you could have some problems.
Dark Side of the Pooch, brought to you by the wonderful folks down at Ed's Pet World. They've been in business for nearly 50 years. I was just down there the last couple of days. They're closed on Mondays and Tuesdays, open the rest of the week. And also Sasquatch Toys and Comics. They're going to be part of our ABC 33 show called Starting Lineup a little bit later on in the fall. And we'll also have Dr. Rab come up in the studios and be on our show as well. So you can put a face with that wonderful voice he gives us if, in fact, you're listening on a podcast and not watching us on our YouTube channel here, Dark Side of the Pooch, 208-0301, 208-0301, rossbridgevet.com. What's the best way to remember a pet? My daughter's calling our next door neighbor. They're the ones that had seven dogs. You actually helped, and we've had a lot of death. I think you've helped put down two of their dogs in the last year I've been here. So they're down to like three animals now, three dogs, which is great because there's not three dogs don't bark as much as six. And then, of course, we lost one of ours. But what's the best way? She was like, I can make some plaster real quick and we can come over and do the paw prints. I'm like, listen, I just got dog crap all over my carpet. I said, it's not that important. I said, just, you know, we just want to have a quiet little ceremony and be done with it. But are there some interesting different ways that we don't think of as dog owners? Oh, by the way, I left my collar over there. Frisco collar. I need to pick a Frisco's collar. I'm going to come over tomorrow morning and pick that up. But are there ways besides just having keepsakes of animals that are let go? You can cremate them. I know you can put them in taxidermy. You can put them in plaster. I mean, what can you do? What are some things, what ways you can remember your pets?
You can always get them cremated. And you know, we have probably about, and when you get them cremated, you can either get the ashes returned or not. You know, if you don't have a place to bury them, like, so you
there's
did.
People in it. There's people that get your dog cremated, but they don't get the ashes back.
Correct. So the reason that they don't do that is because in Hoover and certain other areas, you're not supposed to bury them.
Yeah.
Even though we just talked about how you did that on the air, which is fine. I'm not.
Dude, come on. Just come to 1813 Strawberry Lane. Come to the house and feel free to start digging around. You come near my dog. I mean, seriously, if Hoover it's got that much of a pencil up their ass that they're going to have to look at people that bury their animals in the front yard. Seriously. I mean, we're not coming after people. We're not distributing tickets for that, are we? Really?
No, we're not. Oh, we're not. Gosh. That's what I'm saying. I'm not the burial police by any means. Okay. So let me get that out of the way.
Yeah.
But there are also people who either don't have the means to dig a hole deep enough, or they don't want to deal with it, period. Or they live in an area that's really rocky, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. Basically they either don't want to, or they can't.
Yeah.
So you're going to, you know, your only option is to put them in a trash can or have them cremated,
yeah.
You know, and no one's going to put their, you know, beloved pet in a trash can. It's just not what you do. So, but if you don't want to bury your pet, or you don't have the ways and means, and you got to cremate them.
Yeah.
And then some people like to get the ashes back. And if you get the ashes back, it comes in a standard little wooden box, or you can pick like a really elaborate urn that they come back in. You know, it's kind of up to them. But yeah, you can do paw prints and plaster. Something that we do sometimes is we'll ink their bottom of their foot, and we'll put that on a piece of paper. So you
the
know,
plaster
you
ones kind of fall apart like after a while. Just so people know, the plaster falls apart.
Yeah,
right. Yeah,
and some people request hair. Some people request to clip some hair and like put it in a little container for them.
All right. This is going to sound kind of disgusting. Has anyone ever requested a body part? Because no. I'm going to be honest with you right now. I was this close. It had a
tooth. Maybe it's two teeth count.
Yeah. I mean, a tooth, I guess I wouldn't want to pull if it was loose, you pull a tooth, but a paw wouldn't have been. My son was like, "You're going to do what?" And I was like, "Would it be wrong to cut a paw off? What would happen if you cut a paw off? Would it just get rotten, or would it just stink?
Oh my gosh. Yes. It'd be disgusting.
Okay. There's no way to put like a paw in formaldehyde or whatever. Well, like rabbit's feet, how they do rabbit's feet.
I don't think that's real.
A rabbit's foot's not real.
I think they're totally,
no,
I think they are. Listen, if anyone is out there listening and they have insight on this, I don't think that rabbit's feet are actually rabbit's feet.
I used to have a rabbit's foot. Did you ever have a rabbit's foot?
Oh yeah. A little keychain.
Every little boy had a keychain rabbit foot. Oh, I'm going to have to find that out because I always thought that was real.
Here's how I could potentially see it being real. You take the hide, you know, like you take the skin and you dry it.
Yeah.
And then you glue the hair on it. There is absolutely no way that it is real hair. There's no way.
Really?
I mean, I would be willing to bet money, not a large amount of money, but I would be willing to bet a sum of money that the fur is absolutely manufactured. And if anything, the hide is dried and they put the hair on there, but I bet that's not even accurate anymore. Maybe back in like Daniel Boone and Davy Crockett's day, you know, they figured out a way, but yeah, you can keep things in formaldehyde, but if you just kept a dog's paw like on your kitchen table, I mean, it would stink bad. And then eventually it would stop stinking and it would just decompose until you got to the bone. And then the bone would just be there forever, you know. Probably the best thing to do is if you want to keep a skeleton is to like take a body part and put it in some kind of like, you know, solvent, like some kind of solvent that will get all the soft tissue off of it. And then you keep the bone.
Yeah. That's kind of creepy. Not when I am talking about, you know, chopping off one of his paws. Cause I was sitting there holding his paw and I thought, man, this would be kind of nice just to have a little keepsake, to have a little paw, you know, I could rub on. And I'm talking, what am I doing? This is bizarre.
Well, you're Buffalo Bill.
I know. Well, I know you like raccoon's tails. You can say raccoon tails. Like I know this for real. My brother's actually got like a collection of raccoon tails. Like he collects raccoon.
I'm gonna look this up right now.
Yeah, look it up. A rabbit feet real.
Tell us about one of our sponsors.
Yeah, Sasquatch Comics and Toys and Comics down there in Citation Lane in beautiful Homewood. They opened up last October. I cannot believe they're coming up on their 1 year anniversary. They're fantastic. We're gonna be doing something here on our starting lineup show on ABC 3340. Butts up against the ABC SEC early game of the week. Call called Hero of the Week. We're going to tie it into Marvel DC Comics. And while you can go down there and see your heroes in your magazines, we'll have a college football Hero of the Week with the fine folks at Sasquatch Comics and Toys, Toys and Comics. We'll do that a little bit later on this season. What did you find out?
Well, we're both correct. I mean, some are manufactured and apparently some are real.
Really?
According to Wikipedia.
So the hair doesn't fall out. And I wouldn't think there'd be a lot of blood and a lot of cartilage and stuff in a foot. I would think you'd do something to prepare it to be dried out, but maybe you sun dry it or something, like, you know, those Ethiopian people do with their fish, you know, where they sun dry the fish and then they end up peeling the bones off and eating the bones.
Yeah, it's too much. It's too much to read. But apparently we're both correct. But I would bet that, if you've kept a lucky rabbit's foot from when you were a kid before warm, that when you go into the junk drawer where it's kept, you may just come upon this and proceed to apparently fur disintegrates. So see, this was a real one.
Yeah.
This was a real one. And I guess the way you can tell is if you have a real one or not, is if you've had it for a couple of years and it still looks the same, then it's not a real rabbit's foot.
Oh yeah. Well, I guess mine was not real then, because mine lasted like a good 5 or 6 years. And I kept that bad boy too. All right, we got a couple more emails. We're at 30 minutes, but let's finish this up real quick. Had an email here from Ted. He said he knows Dr. Rab loves bands like Phish. What other bands are like Phish that you really like?
The Grateful Dead. I think that's kind of the one that's maybe the intro level jam band to everybody. Yeah. There's a new band out now. I'll say new, but they've kind of been, they're starting to play bigger like theaters now. They're called Goose.
Goose, okay.
Goose. So they're really, really great musicians. Other ones that are kind of that I've loved through the years, another one's called String Cheese Incident, which sounds like a really ridiculous name.
I've heard about them.
They're very kind of started out kind of jammy bluegrass. Mm. They're really great. I like them a lot. I've seen them a few times. But those are, there's like, let's see.
You like Chris Stapleton?
Humphreys McGee is one. McGee is really popular. They're like kind of more of prog, like think like Rush, the jam band. If you like Rush, they do a lot of great mashup covers too. Humphreys McGee has a fantastic mashup album where they do Electric Avenue and they mash it with some other song. It's incredible. But I would tell anyone that's a big music fan, get Humphreys McGee. Like, I think it's called maybe Zebra.
Humphreys McGee. I'm going to write this down. Humphreys McGee.
Yeah, Humphreys McGee. They do something.
I love Electric Avenue, by the way. That's a great.
You would lose it over this song because it's Highway to Hell. It's Highway to Hell mashed up with Electric Avenue. You've got to listen to it.
Oh, yeah.
You've got, like, after the show, you got to listen to me and message me and tell me what you think, because it's going to blow your mind.
I love Electric Avenue, and because I always think that's a great song to sample. I mean, I'm surprised there's not a rap album, and there probably is with that at the beginning. That's fantastic. Yeah. Chris Stapleton, you like him?
I'm not a big country guy. I mean,
I'm not either. I don't even consider him country. I mean, he's just so bluesy and soulsy. He's one of those guys, though. It's just amazing. And I just saw a piece on him on 60 Minutes, and I haven't heard but maybe one or two of his songs. Every song he sings, though, sounds like it's the last time he's going to sing it. It's fantastic.
He's got a great voice. I'll tell you about as country as I get, which this is kind of country, but for some reason, I really like Dwight Yoakam.
I love me some Dwight Yoakam. Faster Than You is one of my favorite songs.
Yeah.
Love that song. And I like him as an actor too.
He's a great actor. I shouldn't say he's a great actor. He's an actor.
He's in a couple of movies, but I mean, he's got that look. I want to throw something at you. And I shared this with someone else. I can't remember what it wasn't you, but I wanted to remember. I actually wrote it down and highlighted it here. Billy Joel just played his 150th show at Madison Square Garden. He's done. He played sold out one show a month for 10 years. Not really sure why he stopped. When he went into it, he's like, I'm just going to play one a month. And, when people stop coming, I'll stop playing. And now it's gotten the point where people have seen him like 100 times. And they're like, it's almost like going to see your favorite band at Buffalo Wild Wings on a Friday. I mean, there's Billy Joel again playing, at the end of Madison Square Garden. And he would mix it up so you'd get different shows. And I was thinking the other day, And I forget what the song was I heard. It may have been like something like Stairway to Heaven, something that's just really like huge. But I was thinking to myself about music, and I knew you'd appreciate this, so go with me here. And I haven't been eating those mushrooms in my front yard, by the way.
that one would kill you, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, probably would. But when you write a song, songs are written to be sung, not to be heard. They're meant to be sung. You have to sing it first in order for it to be heard. You understand what I'm saying?
That's deep. Yeah, that sounds really simple, but it's deep.
And so when you write a song and you're the writer of that song and the singer of that song, and you decide that you no longer want to sing that song again, that song, in a weird, strange kind of way, dies, because you can still hear it on the radio. You can hear another person cover it. You can hear another person sing it. But when a man or an individual, a woman or a band has written a song, a great song, and they play it for the last time, like I'm thinking Billy Joel, Piano Man. Let's say he just decide he doesn't want to do any more shows. And I mean, he doesn't do any weddings. He doesn't do any special things, you know, the Kennedy Honor Awards or whatever. He no longer will have a platform or an avenue to play, or he could be sitting around his backyard with a bunch of buddies and someone says, man, play Piano Man. I know that probably doesn't happen, but to know that there are songs out there that will never be played again or heard the way they were written to be sung, it's just, it just, my head kind of exploded. I was kind of like, wow, that's kind of, it's the song kind of dies on the vine. Does that touch you at all? Does that make sense to you?
So in the type of music that I like, so these like long form songs, these bands, these jam bands, they're usually really prolific in their songs that they write. I mean, you know, the Grateful Dead, I mean, they just had, I don't know how many songs, but I mean, tons and tons of songs, and they did so many covers and everything, and they would shelve songs for decades. Mm-hmm. Like, probably one of the most famous ones is Saint Stephen. And, that was a song that Bob song, mm-hmm. that he sung. It wasn't a Jerry song, it was Bob's song. And it was a song that was heavy in the rotation in the 60s. And it disappeared for 10, 15 years. I'm sure there's people listening to this show. They're like, no, you idiot. They stopped playing it in 73 and they brought it back in, you know, in 79, you know, whatever, but they shelved, it was one of their staples, and they shelved it for a long time. And Phish does that too. I mean, when you're listening to Phish shows, I'll look back at the set list every night. I'll look back and see what they played, and I'll see a song that I haven't seen in a set list in a while. I'm like, oh man, when's the last time played? The LTP last time played. So then I'll go back to, the Phish Almanac website, and I'll be like, last time played December 17th, 2012, you know, and it's mind blowing. That's what you live for. Like when you're into jam music, you want to see those big bust outs. Oh, so what you're saying resonates with me. Because that's, as a jam band fan, that's what I live for. Let me see a song that hasn't been played in 10, 12, 15 years.
Yeah. I mean, I just, you know, it just really kind of struck me, because I've heard these songs, and I think there was an article, you know, a lot of these rock and rollers are selling their catalogs now. I mean, Bruce Springsteen just sold his catalog for like $450 million. And basically it's to GSM or one of these music companies. They basically buy your everything, you know. Eddie Van Halen didn't sell his stuff. Prince didn't sell his stuff. But they basically own everything that you have ever written. In some cases, they can own what you write from that point on, or you can own that new material, but they own every catalog. If they want to do a TV commercial with it, they get all the money and all the proceeds and everything goes, and all the licensing goes to this company. And the thought process is, you're not selling out. Your thought is, you can't take it with you when you go. Chances are, if you have a $450 million catalog, and you have three children, you're going to leave it up to them to split the stuff in some type of lawsuit, or, you know, okay, who are you going to decide? So you're kind of, it's like having an estate sale, you know, before you die. Just go ahead and get the money, and that way you can just split the money and go on your merry way, and someone will have the music, and you hope they do a great job with that music. And so now bands are talking about selling the rights to the name of the band, so the band can live in infamy. For example, Lynyrd Skynyrd has been touring since 1973, and there's not one remaining member in the band that is one of the original members. And so, in a sense, assuming that they all don't drop off at one time, if you have a member, there's eight or nine guys in the band, every 5 or 6 years, Lynyrd Skynyrd could be playing in the year 2080. And it could be playing Freebird. And it could sound just as good as it does now. And it really could have as much meaning as it does now, because you haven't had the entire, I guess you can make the argument that when the plane went down, the band was over, it was done. But they're still out there touring, they're still selling out. And so there was the idea, like Steve Perry and John McCain, they could sell Journey. And I brought it up because I was in Tuscaloosa several years ago, and I saw the Coasters were playing on the Strip. And the Coasters, I don't know if you know the Coasters from the old 1950s, they had a song called Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. They had a couple of it. And it was these four black guys. It was a fantastic band. It was before the 60s, right? And the Coasters were playing, and I'm thinking, this was like 1994. And I'm like, no way. And so I knew it had to be the Coasters because it was the Coasters. It wasn't like the Coasters Revisited. It wasn't CCR. It wasn't Creedence Clearwater Revisited. It was the Coasters. So I paid $10, and it's these four 21-year-old black dudes who are in these great suits playing the Coasters. And I was like, what's going on here? And he's like, yeah, we bought the rights to the band, so we own their music and we can do whatever we want with it. And they were like, wow, the new Coasters 40 years later. And they were fantastic. They were great. And so I'm thinking to myself, do I want Journey to be around in 2067? And they're still playing Don't Stop Believing, you know, live. As long as they keep getting the right singers to come in and replace the Furtherland. And so these classic rock bands can live forever, right? I mean, it's just like Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend. They're not the Who, but they're the Who. When they tour together, they're called the Who, but they're not the Who anymore. So that's where I kept thinking, okay, who's going to continue to sing these songs that were written, you know, back in the 50s and 60s, 70s. Anyway, I
have no problem with people selling out. You want to sell your catalog, because that's like selling a business.
Yeah.
That's what you have. Like, sure, that's what you've accumulated. That's what you've worked your whole life for. That happens all the time. And I'm sure there's people out there who can't stand the fact that at one point, you know, Michael Jackson owned the Beatles.
Yeah.
Mm. He did. But I mean, that's the Beatles' creation to do whatever they want with it. You know, it's just like selling a business. It's no different. And if you want to sell the rights to the band, go for it. Mm-hmm. And if you're at the right place, right time, somebody buys it. But at some point, people are just not going to care about that music anymore. You know, no matter how good it is, because some of the best music ever made, you know, Beethoven, Bach, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. People are still into it, but they're not into it like they were, you know, in the 1600s or whenever it was written. You know, so, you know, people aren't going to care. Well, I don't know. Maybe this will be the worst hot take ever. Somebody will cue this up like 15 years from now when Journey makes a huge comeback. But, you know, in 15, 20 years, I just don't think anyone's going to care.
By the way, and I just wanted to pull this up. Michael Jackson, you mentioned, he used to own the publishing rights to most of the Beatles catalog, but he merged with Sony's catalog in 1995. So Sony Music Publishing owns the Beatles now. However, Yoko Ono, John Lennon's widow, has an agreement with Sony that allows her to retain control of Lennon's royalties until 2050. This agreement is due to a law that allows songwriters' heirs to claim royalties on their behalf if the songwriter dies within 28 years of writing the song. That's interesting.
Oh,
so if he dies within 28 years.
Man, so many loopholes.
I mean, really. But I mean, she's got to be like 80, right? She's not going to live to 2050.
No. Yeah, she might be in her mid-70s, maybe.
Well, we have to look that up.
Because Paul was the youngest Beatle.
Yeah.
And I think he's 85 now. So I bet Yoko and Paul might be the same age. So yeah, maybe early 80s.
Yoko is 85. She's 89.
Wow.
She's born in 1933.
Dang. What a life. A heroin addict. Man, a heroin addict. Yeah. And she's still alive at almost 90. I mean, maybe she wasn't a heroin addict very long.
Yeah. And Paul was born in 42. So 58 and 24. So 82.
There you go. The youngest Beatle.
Yeah, I did I ever share you the story about my conversation I had with Yoko?
No.
Oh, remind me to tell you next week because we're running really late. Okay. I want to make sure we get some shows out of this. Next week I'll tell you about my conversation I had with Yoko, and it was amazing.
I can't wait. Seriously.
Yeah, from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It was crazy. It was a crazy story. All right, tell people how they can find you, my friend. Great show.
You can email us, rossbridgeanimalhospital@gmail.com. You can call us at 208-0301. Listen to that song.
I'll do it.
By Humphreys McGee.
What's it called?
I think it's... it's some mashup. It might be Highway to Electric Avenue, maybe, or something like that.
All right, I'll do it. I'll listen to it right now. Love you, brother. Thank you.
All right, man. Love you.
Big show brought to you by us, our fine folks down there in Citation Lane, Sasquatch, Toys and Comics. They've got all kinds of great stuff down there, 60s, 70s, 80s, all kinds of wonderful comics, collector stuff, stuff worth thousands of dollars. They got all kinds of weird, wonderful toys still unopened in the boxes, watches, you name it, they got it. Check it out. And also Ed's Pet World, in business for nearly 50 years. Stay tuned for the starting lineups. We're going to have this great thing called Hero of the Week. We're going to tie it into some of their comics. We'll be doing that a little later on. But until then, have yourself a wonderful week, and thanks for watching right here on Dark Side of the Pooch.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.